It's Saturday, October 16th, 2021, and there is no going back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show. My name is Shannon Young. I'm going to be your host tonight. First off, I want to say if you have followed me over here from Podzilla 1985, which is the podcast network that I started over 6 years ago, I want to thank you. I also want to warn you that this show is not going to be like Podzilla 1985. If you're expecting that same kind of humor, that same kind of over-the-top comedy and entertainment like we try to provide on Podzilla 1985, and I hope we succeed more than we fail, you might be a little bit disappointed. This show, No Turning Back, is kind of more like the Thursday and Friday show over on PZ85. If you listen to Thursday, which is called After Dark, you know that the show is normally split kind of halfway between the serious topics that I like to talk about and the more fun topics that, you know, everyone else, I think, prefers to talk about. And even on Friday, which is a show that we call Horse Time, which, by the way, if you're not a fan of Podzilla 1985 and you're listening to this fresh and you have no idea who I am or what I'm talking about, you're probably wondering what the hell you've tuned into if this guy's talking about a show he does called Horse Time, which, by the way, has nothing to do with horses. Don't know why we call it that. But even on Horse Time, we sometimes dip our toes into the political, into the more serious topics, and it's not always fun. Some of my favorite shows that we've done on Podzilla 1985 have been serious shows where we talk about real issues. If you go back through the history of PZ85 in the over 6.5 years that we've been doing it, you'll see a lot of shows about police brutality, gay rights, shootings, tragedies. I mean, we've covered everything. And somewhere along the line, it changed over from being a semi-serious show with some entertainment and comedy into an almost entirely comedic entertainment venture. And I'm not saying that I have a problem with that. I like having fun and doing comedy. I think I'm good at it. But I'm also a journalist. I went to college for journalism, as a lot of people know. I've studied it. I've practiced it most of my life. And it's something that I want to continue to do. So this show, No Turning Back, is kind of my way of being able to talk about these things without feeling like I'm dragging down the rest of my friends and cast who maybe don't want to talk about these kind of topics. So after weeks and months of planning this and trying to figure out what exactly I wanted to do, I finally decided today to just make the jump, to just jump into it, as Philip DeFranco would say. And in all honesty, we actually did film an episode of this months ago, before I moved out of my apartment and before I moved into the home that I purchased. I did film kind of a prototype episode for this that I ended up shelving. We'll never see the light of day because most of it turned out to just be me talking about my personal life. And I justified that by trying to explain why I came to doing the show. Like, what was the inspiration for doing the show and how everything that happened to me in my life led me to this moment and how there was no turning back. And it was honestly, it was a good, the final line of that was fantastic. You could put that on a t-shirt and sell it. But at the same time, after doing Podzilla for 6.5 years, over 6.5 years, and talking about my personal life on there way too much, I kind of realized that it was a bad idea and I shelved the episode. And like I said, it will never see the light of day. I've deleted it at this point. You can't find it. No one can use it against me. So instead, I thought, well, what can we talk about tonight? Now, normally, this show, No Turning Back, is going to be analysis. We're going to be talking about the weekend of the new, you know, weekly news, what happened, you know, how it affects us, how it shapes everything. We're going to be talking about, you know, entertainment. We'll be talking about the paranormal. We'll talk about whatever really is relevant that week. But this week, for our first show, our first official show, I thought, how about we do a deep dive into something that should no longer be as important as it is. It should no longer be the driving force that it still is, but It obviously still is, and that's why we're talking about it, and that's why we'll probably continue talking about it for, at this point, I don't know how long. And that topic, of course, is former President Donald J. Trump. Now, if you've listened to the shows before, over on the other network, you know that Donald Trump was a favorite target of mine. And it's not because I hate him because he is a Republican. I don't hate Republicans. I think devoting yourself to any party, whether it be Democratic or Republican, is a mistake. I think a two-party system is ridiculous. That's a show for another time. But I don't hate Donald Trump because he's a Republican. I don't hate Republicans. I lean more liberal, obviously. You know, I've been accused of being a couple things in my life, and being liberal is one of them. I prefer to think of myself as middle road. I calls them like I sees them. And in the case of Donald Trump, I think, and I have thought for a long time, that Donald Trump is the worst president that we have ever had. Now, for those of you that are either turning off the show immediately now, or maybe you're still listening to the show and you're just fuming, let me explain. Let me kind of dive into why I think that and why maybe I'm not right. Again, I don't hate Republicans. I hate the, and hate is a strong word, and I'm trying to be more accepting of other people's views. I swear that I am. I try not to hate. But I probably do hate those Republicans who are strictly on the Trump diet. The same kind of Republicans who would march through Charlottesville with tiki torches or invade the United States Capitol to stop to stop a president being, you know, I forget the term for it, and I'm not going to go back and look it up because this is the second take I've had for the first 5 to 10 minutes of the show, and I'm not doing it again. Point is, you know what happened on January 6th. We're going to talk about it a little bit later. My point is, I believe those Trump fanatics who call themselves Republicans, but really are not Republicans. They're just followers and worshipers of this orange god. They are dangerous. Do I hate them? Probably, because some of the things I've seen them say and do are absolutely disgusting. But I don't consider them to be Republicans. There are a lot of Republicans that are them, but they are not Republicans by nature. And Donald Trump himself, you would think that now that he is out of office, he wouldn't be a hot topic anymore. But, you know, here we are, months removed from Donald Trump being president, and he's still making headlines. Just this week, he said that unless the fraud, he claims to be a fraud, if the 2020 election is exposed, and I guess he is reinstated as president, which I assumed was supposed to happen already, according to the MyPillow guy, that Republicans will not be voting. He encouraged the Republicans not to vote in the 2022 and 2024 elections, which, again, sounds great. You know, I don't consider myself a liberal. I don't consider myself a conservative. I'm somewhere in the middle, but I do think that those Trump fanatics, if they're not voting, I think America would probably be better off. That's just my opinion. That's why you're here, to hear my opinion. But the question I asked myself earlier, and I continue to ask, is, especially because we can't stop talking about the guy, is Donald Trump the worst president of all time? My gut instinct says yes. When I think about everything he's said and done, my gut instinct says yes. Donald Trump is clearly the worst president of all time. I mean, this is a president who, even before he was elected, said some of the most heinous and disgusting things. And then as president, did some awful things to good people. And, well, let's talk about it. We're going to start in the beginning. We're going to talk about Donald Trump announcing his presidency. We're going to talk about what happened during Trump's presidency, how it continues to affect us, and how it's going to affect us in the future. I think Donald Trump, I don't know, if you just know Donald Trump as the president or the guy from The Apprentice, you may not know that Donald Trump is a longtime businessman, I guess you could say. a lot of failed businesses. He may have gone bankrupt once or twice. And somehow, despite all that, he somehow convinced an entire nation that he was the very symbol of wealth and prosperity. And it's, the people have said that before, but it's not wrong. I mean, I remember growing up, you know, I'm an 80s kid. And in the 80s especially, there was a big emphasis on greed and wealth. And even as a kid, I knew the name Donald Trump. Donald Trump was synonymous with wealth and success. I didn't have the internet because the internet didn't exist yet, so there was no way for me to fact check that. I simply went by appearances. And by all appearances, Donald Trump was the very, you know, measure of success and wealth in the United States of America. I mean, he's got buildings with his name on it in giant gold letters. You can't get much bigger than that. Donald Trump, the businessman, the now known failed businessman, somehow convinced an entire country of how rich and important he is, to the point that he was invited on to Fox News, on MSNBC. I've seen the man, even before he ran for president, on all of these shows talking about politics today, giving his opinion on things, despite the fact that he had no qualifications or credentials to give his input on politics or anything like that. Which, the irony being that I myself have also never, I've never actually served in office or anything like that either. But, you know, there's a difference between me doing a podcast from the basement of my house and Donald Trump going on these big shows being asked what his opinions are when it comes to, you know, issues in the United States, the military, foreign issues. And Donald Trump gave his opinion on everything, like he was a senator, like he was in the military, like this guy knew what he was talking about because he had any kind of experience, when he absolutely did not. He didn't go to school for journalism. He didn't study any of this stuff. He was just rich and he spoke. And when rich white people speak in America, people listen, even if it's not a good idea. And I remember Donald Trump being on all these shows when I was a kid, and I thought he must have served. I thought maybe he had served in the military, which he didn't. He got out of it. I thought maybe he was a senator or a mayor or something. I mean, hell, even Jerry Springer was a mayor. But no, Donald Trump didn't have any political experience. He had no business talking about these things, and yet he did. And somehow he became a major political player in Washington, despite that fact. I don't know if you can really trace back the exact moment that Donald Trump decided to run for president. He had been on different shows saying that he never intended to run for president, which would have been great. But I do remember, you can go back to, I forget what year it is too. I meant to look this up beforehand. But it was during during one of the big press events, and the name of it escapes me, but it's the one where basically all of the different political parties, I mean, they all gather together, and they there's usually a comedian hosting it, and he kind of roasts them, and they all roast each other. The Correspondents' Dinner is what I was trying to think of. And during this particular year, Seth Meyers, former writer for Saturday Night Live and current late night host on NBC, and you've probably seen the clips, Seth Meyers, during one of his bits, absolutely eviscerated Donald Trump, who was in the crowd. And I remember one quote specifically where he said that Donald Trump said he would be running as a Republican, which surprised him because he assumed Donald Trump would be running as a joke. They cut to Donald Trump in the crowd. Trump, everyone's laughing, of course, because it's funny. It's objectively funny, except to Donald Trump, who they show and just has the sternest look on his face. And Seth Meyers didn't end there. He made fun of his hair and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It was all fun. And a lot of people can laugh at themselves. Donald Trump obviously cannot laugh at himself. That is a trait that he completely lacks. And, you know, the old saying, the rumor is that it was that moment that convinced Donald Trump to enter into politics and try to become, you know, a real player. And I think Seth Meyers feels bad about that. I've watched his show. I watched the Seth Meyers, Late Night with Seth Meyers, and he's apologized many times for kind of tricking Donald Trump into moving into politics. Trump announced his his running for president. I remember him going down an escalator, made a big show of it, and we all laughed. We all laughed because we thought there was no way in hell Donald Trump was going to beat any of these other guys who, whether you like them or hate them, were legitimate politicians. You had Ted Cruz in the running, John Kasich, Ben Carson, Marco Rubio. I mean, there were a lot of big names in the Republican Party that were running for president. And then you had Donald Trump, who had no service, who had no political experience. And in place of, you know, talking about the issues and giving legitimate answers about what his plans would be for the United States, he chose, I mentioned Jerry Springer earlier, he chose the Jerry Springer approach and instead kind of made a mockery of our political system, which, to be fair, is probably, you know, ripe for mocking anyway, because a two-party system is pretty ridiculous in a country that is so diverse. So he went on the attack. He mocked his opponents. He made fun of Marco Rubio's size. He made fun of Ted Cruz's wife. He insinuated Ted Cruz's father had something to do with the assassination of John F. Kennedy. He turned it into a sideshow. It became a circus. And people ate it up, man. The anti-establishment crowd absolutely loved it. Never before had a politician been so, to quote my cousin, who quotes Jesse Ventura from The X-Files, never had a politician been so brazen in his antics and the way that he mocked the, you know, political norm. And we laughed about it. We thought he was a ridiculous candidate. As the candidates dropped one by one, people started to take him seriously. Well, not take him seriously, but take seriously the chances that he could actually, you know, get the nomination for president. But me and my friends, because we're smarter than everybody else, we knew that wasn't going to happen. There was no way Trump was going to get the nomination for the Republican, you know, for president. And you can go back and listen on Podzilla 1985. Go back to that month. Go back to when, you know, Trump was he won the nomination, and you can hear us talk about it. And then we were sure that Trump wasn't going to win the presidency. I was sure of it at first, because I thought there's no way in hell that this non-politician who has no idea what he's doing, who has no idea, you know, has no place in politics, there's no way he's going to beat Hillary Clinton. I know Hillary Clinton wasn't, you know, particularly popular at the time. Everyone wanted Bernie Sanders or, you know, literally anyone else. But Hillary Clinton was a politician. She was smart. She devoted her life to this stuff. She was overqualified for the job. And instead, they gave the job to a guy who just walked in off the streets and flashed some cash. And because he had enough charisma and enough charm, and I put charm in quotations, he did win the presidency. And this is after a campaign trail that was absolutely just disastrous. Between the protests and the violence, the quotes, oh my God, Donald Trump's quotes, you can look up a hundreds of them. The man was probably the most quoted president in history. He'll probably go down as the most quoted president in history, and none of it good. I have a couple of quotes here, some of my personal favorite quotes. And this was all before Donald Trump became president. This was, you know, after he announced his run for presidency, or sometimes even before that. These are just some of my favorite quotes from Donald Trump when talking about John McCain, who ran for president against Obama and was a dedicated war hero and politician. He said, John McCain is not a war hero. He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured. This coming from Donald Trump, the man who never served in the military, the man who talked about his love of the military and the military families and all that stuff, who had never served, and he's mocking a war hero because he got caught. He said about terrorism, the other thing with the terrorists is you have to take out their families. When you get these terrorists, you have to take out their families. So he's calling for the murder of, you know, family members of terrorists, okay? The man that portrayed himself so much as a Christian, as a beloved Christian, despite the fact that he cheated on his wife, he multiple times divorced, lies every time he speaks, said, I'm not sure I've ever asked for God's forgiveness. I don't bring God into that picture. When I go to church and I drink my little wine and have my little cracker, I guess that is a form of forgiveness. I do that as often as I can because I feel cleansed. When talking about Carly Fiorina, excuse me, he said, look at that face. Would anyone vote for that? Can you imagine that, the face of our next president? I mean, she's a woman, and I'm not supposed to say bad things, but really, folks, come on. Are we serious? He also made fun of Ted Cruz's wife's looks, by the way. And speaking about beautiful women, and probably the most famous Donald Trump quote, on a bus for Access Hollywood, talking to Billy Bush, Donald Trump said, when speaking about an actress, I forget her name, and I wouldn't say it anyway because I don't want to embarrass her, putting her in this context, I better use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. Just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. And when Billy Bush, who's a garbage person, said you can do anything, Trump said, grab them by the pussy. You can do anything. Despite all those things, despite everything he said and everything he stood for, despite all of the legitimate concerns that he would bring as president, Donald Trump was elected president. And you can also go back to Podzilla 1985 and you can listen to that episode. And you can hear, as the night progresses and we're keeping track of the voting, we're literally keeping track of the votes as the show goes on. And you can hear it in our voice and our tones as it became painfully obvious that Donald Trump was going to win the presidency. We got pretty sad, I guess is the best way to put it. We got pretty sad. And then for the next 4 years, it was nonstop. It was too much noise. Never before, you know, I've lived through a couple presidents myself, and even with social media on the rise, I had never seen a president that just was always on, never stopped talking about Donald Trump, and we're still talking about Donald Trump today. And again, I ask myself, is Donald Trump the worst president we've ever had? The easy answer is yes, for all the things that I've said and all the things that I'm going to say. But then I thought about it, and, you know, we've had presidents who literally owned slaves. We talk about Donald Trump being a racist because of the things he said. You know, again, he called African countries poor and shitholes. He said that Mexico was sending, you know, that they were rapists. Of course, do I believe Donald Trump's racist? Yeah, sure. Of course I do. I know people will defend that, and I don't see how you can. But again, we've had presidents who literally owned slaves. You know, 12 of the first 18 presidents of the United States owned slaves. We're not talking about where they, you know, where did they stand on slavery or where did they stand on civil rights. We're talking about people who literally owned black people. So that's pretty serious. And in looking up some of these Donald Trump quotes, because I wanted to get them right, I found some quotes of other presidents that, you know, I always knew that it was a different time, but the level of racism against, you know, African Americans and Native Americans and the Chinese from presidents of past, it baffled me. I mean, it staggered me. I read a letter from Harry Truman. He wrote a letter to his future wife in which he said, and I'm not going to use the words because I just don't want to do that ever again. I did a show years ago for PZ85, where we talked about the Hulk Hogan scandal, and I used the words in quotes of what he said, and, you know, I felt dirty, even though I was just quoting him, so I'm not going to do it again, but you'll know what I'm saying. Harry Truman wrote to his wife and said, I think one man is just as good as another, so long as he's honest and decent and not a N-word or a Chinaman. Uncle Will says the Lord made a white man from dust, the N-word from mud, and then he threw up on what was left, and it came down a Chinaman. He goes on to say, Uncle Will does hate Chinese and Japs. So do I. It is race prejudice, I guess. But I'm strongly of the opinion Negroes ought to be in Africa, yellow men in Asia, and white men in Europe and America. different times, right? Abraham Lincoln, during the Lincoln-Douglas debates, said, "I am not, nor have ever been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the white and black races. That I am not, nor never have been, in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. And I will say, in addition to this, that there is a physical difference between the white and black races, which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality. And inasmuch as they cannot so live, while they do remain together, there must be the position of superior and inferior. And I, as much as any other man, am in favor of having the superior position assigned to the white race." Imagine if Donald Trump said something to that extent today. Because he said some terrible things. But he's never said anything that blatantly racist, which, again, different time. But, you know, in looking into all of this, I found out that racism was never okay. You know, a lot of people think, well, hey, it was the 80s. It wasn't as big of a deal back then. No, it turns out racism has always been terrible, no matter what time period. Looking down on another person based on their race or their gender or anything else is awful. So despite the fact that it was a different time and it was, you know, quote unquote, more accepted back then, it doesn't make it any better. Anyway. So to hear these people, especially like Abraham Lincoln, who, you know, everyone credits with freeing the slaves and, you know, he did a lot of great things for that. But to hear him speak about black people that way is, you know, mind-boggling. I didn't know that. I didn't know he said things like that. And then that's not it, man. There's a whole list of things that presidents have said and done. JFK was notorious in his scandals and his cheating on his wife, probably more so than Donald Trump even, except the big difference is JFK didn't have to pay, you know, adult actresses to have sex with him. JFK was legitimately charming and handsome, whereas Donald Trump had to pay to play. And, you know, that's another thing. But let's talk about Trump in office. We try to figure out, was Donald Trump the worst president of all time? And I wrote down a couple of things just from the first year and a couple things from the rest of his time in office. And we're going to go over a couple of them. It honestly was a little overwhelming and depressing to research this because I had to relive a lot of things that we went through as a country under Trump's presidency. And even stuff that I had completely forgotten about, because the thing about Trump's presidency was that there was so much being thrown at you at all the time. You never knew whether or not, you know, you never knew what was going to happen the next day. I mean, literally, I'm not trying to exaggerate. I would go to bed from one Trump scandal and then wake up the next day and wonder what the next Trump scandal would be. And, you know, Trump, again, isn't the first president in history to have scandals. I mean, lots of presidents have had scandals. Watergate being the one that pops into my head immediately. And, you know, Richard Nixon was absolutely corrupt. So it's not like Donald Trump is the first person to be a corrupt politician. But it was just the level and the consistency of Trump's scandals that really surprised me. And as I went back and I researched this, it really kind of knocked me for a loop some of the things that I had forgotten he had done. And I haven't even written them all down, because as I said, I went through an entire 4-year history of this man as president, both at the time. I literally lived through 4 years of this man as president. And then I went back through it in the past couple of days, picking, you know, cherry picking some of the things I wanted to talk about the most. Just getting through the year 2017 was a struggle, because so many things happened in 2017 alone, and it would be like this for all 4 years of his presidency. It was a presidency that was marred by scandal, and despite everything that he did, everything that he said, everything he was accused of, not only did he survive all 4 years of his presidency through 2 impeachments, but he still enjoys the support of so many Republicans today, and it's baffling. Let's talk about it. January 20th, of course, 2017, that's the day Donald Trump was sworn into office. I think it's important to note that both the Obamas and the Clintons were there. Hillary Clinton was there, despite the fact that she had been defeated by Donald Trump in the election, and especially despite the fact that she was defeated by the man in the way that she was and the way that he talked about her and talked down to her and talked about her family. She still came to his inauguration. I think it's important to note because if you remember during Biden's inauguration in 2021, Donald Trump did not go. Instead, he held like a goodbye tour on his way out instead of doing the political norm of going to your successor's inauguration, which isn't surprising considering the fact that Donald Trump bucked political standards through his entire presidency. That's part of the reason he was elected, because people attached themselves to this idea of, you know, the anti-establishment. This is the guy that isn't beholden to any real political party. I mean, yeah, he was a Republican, sort of. He was a Democrat. Now he's a Republican. But what is he actually? He's a Trump. And people like that because he was the outsider. And I feel like politics is the only job where you can be an outsider. And that is a plus and not a negative. You know, if I wanted someone to come fix, I bought this house and I had problems with my HVAC. There's in no realm would I look for someone who had no HVAC experience to come out here and pay them to fix it. Generally, when you have a job, you hire the person that is going to do the job the best and has the most experience. But in politics, it turns out that the person that is most experienced and has the best qualifications will lose if she's a woman and the person running against her is a rich white guy, despite how awful he is. But anyway, the tone of the Trump presidency was set pretty quick when Donald Trump claimed that his inauguration crowd was the biggest ever on record. Despite the fact that visual evidence and also statistics and everything else said that he was wrong and that his crowd was actually smaller than President Obama's and wasn't really in the realm of biggest, you know, inauguration crowds in history. Despite this fact, he held on to that. He's never let it go. In fact, I think he still talks about it today. You know, 5 years later or 4 years later, he still talks about it. His press secretary, Sean Spicer, one of like 60 that he had during his presidency, was quoted as saying, and he said it emphatically too. Like, Sean Spicer did not just say it. I remember seeing this. He said this with gusto. He said this was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period, both in person and around the globe. The crowd, you know, based on pictures and metro tickets and stuff like that, was only about a third of Obama's inauguration crowd. And as far as television goes, around 7 million fewer people watched it. And despite that fact, despite facts, which Trump ally Kellyanne Conway would later go on to famously say that the, you know, there were facts and then there were alternative facts, and they were just presenting alternative facts. Which, by the way, there is no such thing as alternative facts. Just so you know, there's facts. Facts are facts. Alternative facts don't exist. But despite that, they still claim that his crowd size was bigger. And it was such a big deal to him, too, because, like I said, Donald Trump can't not take himself seriously. He cannot show weakness. He cannot be anything less than the best at everything. And he claims to be the best at everything. If you've looked through his entire presidency, he has the most knowledge about everything. He knows the most about everything. So for them to call him out and say that his crowd wasn't as big as the guy before him, the guy that he, you know, claimed wasn't even from America. Well, like Michael Jordan said, they took that personally. On January 21st, the first full day of Trump's presidency, hundreds of thousands of people protested the threat that the Trump administration posed to, you know, reproductive, civil, and human rights in the nation's capital during the Women's March on Washington. You remember that? At the same time this was happening in Washington, millions protested in solidarity across the world, and it was the largest single-day protest in U.S. history. And it was the first of many protests during the Trump presidency. We'll talk about that a little bit later. On January 25th, Donald Trump signed an executive order to build a Mexico border wall. This was one of the biggest rallying points that Trump had. This is one of the things. Build the wall. He had a couple things that his people like to chant and yell during rallies and during, you know, the campaign. Lock her up. Build the wall. Grab her by the... No, sorry. That was just Trump. That was just Trump that said that. Well, Trump and, like, a bunch of really stupid people that put it on t-shirts. But anyway, He signed an executive order to build the Mexico border wall, and he said that Mexico would pay for the wall. It goes back to when he was running for office, and he was talking about Mexico and how they were sending rapists. He was hardcore against immigration. He wanted to keep them out. America first was their policy, and Trump was going to build this big, glorious wall all across the border between Mexico, and Mexico was going to pay for it. And people believed it. People still believe it. There are people that still believe that not only did Mexico pay for the wall, but that there's this big, glorious 9,000 feet tall wall separating us from Mexico. Well, the truth of the matter is that the bill for the wall, which was estimated to be between $8 to $10 billion originally, ended up being over $15 billion. And guess who paid for it? You did. United States taxpayers, not Mexico. And if you don't believe me, look it up. I know you're probably going to try to present me with some alternative facts. I once again tell you that there are no such things. They're just facts. And the facts are that Mexico never paid for it. We did. And we paid more than he said we would also. The president also said that it was going to be over 1,000 miles long. But as of early 2021, before he left office, when he bragged about building 450 miles of wall, of that 450 miles of wall that exists now, only 47 miles of it are new structure. The rest of it are pieces of wall, or is the wall that had already been there for years. And despite the fact that Trump said he was going to rebuild, he was going to build this great wall, it was going to be 90 feet high, 90 miles high, whatever he said, it turns out that they're just pretty much replaced it with the same thing that was there during the Obama administration. They reinforced what was already there with what was already there. They didn't build anything. They built 47 miles, $15 billion, 47 miles, all paid for by United States taxpayers. And despite that fact, even to this day, a lot of people, and probably most Trump supporters, think that he was 100% successful when it came to the border wall. On January 27th, President Trump signed an executive order limiting entry of all citizens coming from Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Yemen, and Syria for 90 days. I remember this set off another wave of protests, and also really, I don't know if this started, no, this didn't start, because I'm pretty sure the Mexico comments really started the Donald Trump is racist bandwagon, but this certainly didn't help. This Muslim ban was thankfully defeated in court and was one of the first defeats for the Trump administration, the first of many, as you will see if you look through the history. One of my personal favorites, and I have the man's book about it, and I still need to finish it. It's a little long-winded, but in February of 2017, National Security Advisor Michael Flynn resigned, and he would be one of many, many Trump allies and staffers and cabinet members to resign during his administration. Resigned after allegations that he met with Russian officials in the previous months. This was another scandal. FBI Director James Comey, whose book I do have, and I'm looking at it right now on my shelf over there. He refused to stand down in his investigation of Russian collusion and was unceremoniously fired by Trump. In fact, if I remember James Comey saying, he found out about it like watching TV. He got the old WCW Eric Bischoff treatment. This all led to an investigation by special counsel Robert Mueller, and after 2 years resulted in 34 indictments against several members of the Trump campaign. Lots of convictions, lots of guilty pleas, and despite all of that, by the way, most Trump supporters, and even Trump himself, continue to say that it was a witch hunt. A witch hunt with no evidence. But unlike the real witch hunts, where, you know, lots of innocent people were murdered, a bunch of guilty people were found guilty. So, I think our definitions of witch hunt may be a little bit off there. Mueller said he found no evidence of Trump himself colluding with Russia, of course, but on obstruction of justice, Attorney General William Barr wrote that the special counsel decided to, quote, make a traditional prosecutorial judgment. I need more coffee. Leaving it up to the Attorney General to choose whether to bring obstruction charges against the president. Barr declined to do so, and in a letter to Congress, he said it was based on the evidence presented and the Department of Justice guidelines around prosecuting a sitting president. So if I remember correctly, during all this, Mueller didn't say that Trump was innocent. He just said he wouldn't prosecute. And a big part of this was, like, one, Barr was in Trump's pocket. Allegedly, obviously. I don't know how you want me to say that. And Barr wasn't going to prosecute him. And they found a way not to, because there were rules around prosecuting a sitting president. So Trump got off the hook on that. Although, of course, as we all know, it would come back to bite him later. We'll talk about that in a little bit. In June of the same year, Trump withdrew the United States from the Paris Climate Agreement. Trump believed that such environmental red tape, like this international treaty, which bound all participating countries to limiting their greenhouse gas emissions in a set time and pace, was just an obstacle to real economic development. That's one thing Trump always, you know, paraded his love of the working man and the coal industry, and he loved choo-choo trains, and he loved big trucks, and he liked to do the thing where you pull the thing and it makes the noises. Trump was a big fan of stuff like that, despite the fact that, you know, a lot of those jobs were unsafe. I mean, they hurt the environment, and Trump just pulled us right out of there. And I remember that more protests amongst the many, many, many protests. But it wasn't always just protests against Donald Trump. You know, there were some rallies in favor of him by some of his biggest supporters, like in August of that year, when white supremacists in Charlottesville, the Tiki Torch people, they marched at the Unite the Right rally. And they were, of course, met with resistance from anti-racist activists, or Antifa. You know, I guess there were some people that said that. During the clash on August 12th, James Fields purposely drove his car into a group of peaceful protesters that were there to protest the Unite the Right rally, because there were both sides there. And in doing so, he injured 35 people and killed one. He was convicted of first-degree murder for that and was handed two life sentences. Donald Trump was very ambiguous in his response, and he blamed both sides for the violence and claimed that both sides had, quote, very fine people. And this would be a common thing in the Trump presidency up until he left, was Donald Trump's refusal to condemn racism. I mean, getting him to condemn racism was like pulling teeth. Even during the presidential election in 2020, I still remember, I think it was Chris Wallace. He was hosting, he was moderating, and Trump and Biden were on stage, and they were talking about the Proud Boys. And they were just like, they said, just denounce the Proud Boys, just denounce racism. And even when confronted on national television during the presidential debates, Trump still refused to just utter the words, "I condemn racism." I don't know why it was so hard for him to do. And I do know why. It's because a huge chunk of Donald Trump's base is, whether they are extroverts or introverts, or if whether they're obvious or they're subtle, I don't know the right terminology, but they're racist. They either are blatantly racist and proudly use the N-word around, you know, just like willy-nilly, or they don't think they're racist, but they say and do things that are racist. And Donald Trump appeals to both of them. And not only does he appeal to both of them, he also gives a voice to them, and he makes them feel like it's okay to be racist and to be racist in public. And that's why for the past 4+ years, we've had to deal with people in public who are so offensively racist and disgusting. And that's probably never going to go away, by the way. In December of that same year, they passed the Tax Cuts and Job Acts and signed it into law, which was a fiscal overhaul that greatly benefited the wealthy, the effects of which we're still feeling today, you and me, the everyman. In January 2018, it was discovered that Donald Trump had paid $130,000 to adult actress Stormy Daniels to silence her over their affair during the 2016 election. That scandal ended up costing Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, his job. Eventually, they landed him in jail. Trump continued to deny the affair even to this day, and like most things that he's accused of, never really went anywhere, thanks to a lack of evidence and the corruption of Daniel's attorney, Michael Avenatti, who was blackmailing, I think, like Nike into getting money. I mean, like, this Michael Avenatti guy, who's a major scumbag, is like the embodiment of scumbag lawyers, said that he had all this evidence. There was going to be all of this disclosure. It was going to rock the political world. You have to pay attention. Stay tuned. And then nothing came of it. It came and went on to the next Trump scandal. And other than a really funny appearance on SNL by Stormy Daniels, nothing came of it. Michael Avenatti got put in jail. Michael Cohen got put in jail. So there's something, I guess. In December of 2019, Donald Trump was impeached for the first time by the House after charges of abuse of power and obstruction of justice in relation to Trump's alleged efforts to coerce Ukraine into interference in the coming election. If you remember this, it was all about Hunter Biden. It was Rudy Giuliani going over there and trying to get them to investigate. There was a whole corruption allegation against the Biden family, none of which turned out to be true. But because facts don't matter in the Trump universe, now that Trump has become president, since Trump opened the limit configuration, he opened Pandora's box. Most people still believe that Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and Sleepy Joe and, you know, all the other Bidens in the Biden family are guilty of something. But it turns out, you know, facts wise, they're not. Donald Trump was, and that's why he was impeached by the House. But of course, it also didn't go anywhere because he was acquitted by the Senate in February of the following year, because of course he was. The Senate was led by Republicans. And Republicans generally don't, you know, bite the hand that feeds them. There's a couple that do. John McCain did when it benefited him. Mitt Romney, when it benefits him. But for the most part, Republicans stuck together on Trump's, on his, the things that he wanted to pass, on his ideas, on his causes. They followed Trump into hell and back, which is a big difference from the Democratic Party today. You know, to go off on a bit of a tangent here, the Democratic Party is so afraid of their own shadow, and they don't back each other up like I think the Republican Party does. You've got Joe Manchin and you've got Sinema, who's like the oldest scene girl in the United States. And they're holding up all of these things that we assumed Biden would do. Since the Democrats, they have the House, they have the Senate. Oh, we're going to pass all of these great things. But then you start having these Democrats like Manchin start pulling their support. And if some of these Republicans, they've turned them rhinos, you know, Republican name only. I guess, can we call them dinos? Democrats in name only? I don't know. That's a topic for a whole nother thing. And mostly I'm just trying to avoid the subject, because the next thing I wanted to talk about is one of the most unpleasant things, and it's something that upsets me, as it upsets a lot of people, and that is the Black Lives Matter protests. If there's one thing that I remember most from the Donald Trump presidency, it was the Black Lives Matter protests and the murder of George Floyd and the murder of all of these other innocent men and women at the hands of police officers. And up until COVID, which we'll talk about in a minute, the Black Lives Matter protests were the defining argument that I had with so many of my friends and exes and all these other things. Because somehow saying Black Lives Matter was offensive. And Blue Lives Matter was born out of this fear that if people think Black Lives Matter, then they assume that police lives don't. Blue Lives Matter, it feels like a very racist cause, because it feels like it exists only to take away the importance of Black people saying their lives matter. Donald Trump, during the riots, during the protests, I only say riots when it comes to the fact that in some cases, unmarked police, well, I guess you could say police officers, military officers, something would storm these protests, these peaceful protests, and cause violence and take people away in what seems like a thriller movie. And I still never found out what the hell that was all about. But Donald Trump said, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. And he really turned his followers against this righteous cause of saying Black people shouldn't be treated differently just because they're Black, which is what the whole Black Lives Matter protest was about. It wasn't about saying, hey, we're better than you and our lives matter more. It was literally saying our lives matter and we're tired of you pretending that it doesn't. But Donald Trump turned his people against that. And suddenly Black Lives Matter was controversial. It was politicized. It wasn't just human rights. Now it was us versus them. And then there was, during those protests, during the Black Lives Matter protests at Lafayette Square, when protesters outside were gassed and beaten by the military, so that Donald Trump, who had been accused of hiding during the protests and wanted to reestablish his dominance, could have a photo op holding a Bible in front of St. John's Church. Literally had the crowd beaten, had the crowd gassed, and moved to the side just so he could walk over to this church, take a photo in front of it, holding a Bible up, and then that would endear him to his followers. And it did. That's the sad part. It absolutely did. And then there's the coronavirus. And I've only got about 10 minutes left here because I'm trying to keep these shows to a 10-minute minimum. But the coronavirus, which is still happening today, despite the fact that Joe Biden is in office, despite the fact that we have a vaccination or a vaccine, and you can get vaccinated literally right now for free pretty much anywhere, the coronavirus is still killing people daily. And even though I know Donald Trump did not create the coronavirus, he did not create COVID-19, how many people died because of the way he handled it? Because not only did Donald Trump in the beginnings, and I remember this really well, because this all went down during the hardest part of my life, and I had nothing other than sitting there in a chair watching television. So I watched all this happen daily, hour by hour. Donald Trump saying that it wasn't a big deal, it was just like the flu. When that didn't work, you know, he in leaked audio to a journalist saying, I think it was Bob Woodward, saying that he purposely was downplaying the significance of the coronavirus, of COVID-19, knowing that it was more dangerous than it was. I mean, this exists, and nothing came from it. And by the time Trump left office, after saying that it wasn't a big deal, after pushing an anti-mask policy, after, you know, basically bucking all scientific facts and putting his people and anyone that would listen to a dangerous position of not taking COVID-19 seriously, which still exists today. When he left office, over 300,000 people in the United States alone were dead. And even though I've tried to give him credit for the race to create a vaccine that he spearheaded originally, I try to give him credit for that. But if he had just handled things differently from the beginning, where would we be as a country right now? If Donald Trump had just talked to his followers and told them the significance of the vaccine, the significance of COVID-19, told them how they could protect themselves, how they could save their own lives and save the lives of the people around them, if he had just promoted it as a serious issue like he should have, instead of tiptoeing around it and turning it into a political discussion and politicizing masks and politicizing science and politicizing facts, how many people could have been saved? And we're still fighting it today. And that's where I wanted to bring it all full circle. Because I left out a whole bunch of stuff, man. I left out a whole bunch of things that Donald Trump did because I only have so much time to talk about this stuff. The first year of the Trump presidency alone was exhausting. To go through 4 years of that and try to fit it all into a one-hour audio program that you guys could listen to was impossible. But I did want to come first full circle to the fact that, you know, the reason we still have the coronavirus and COVID-19 today, the reason we haven't snuffed it, is because of Donald Trump and because of his followers and the way he has lied to them. And not just him, but the political power that he swings throughout the Republican Party and throughout Republican, you know, conservative media, even to this day. All those presidents that I talked about before, the racism of Abraham Lincoln, of Harry Truman, you know, the presidents that owned slaves, all of those presidents before, their time has passed. Their power is gone. I don't think anyone invokes anything in the name of, you know, James Garfield. But unlike them, despite the fact that Donald Trump is out of office, he still wields so much political power, it's staggering. It's baffling. He pretty much runs, I mean, it's almost like a shadow government that Donald Trump controls, because they're still pushing his lies. And they're still, I wish I'd looked up the percentage of how many Republicans still think that Joe Biden is a, you know, is not the actual president, that Donald Trump actually won the presidency and it's a conspiracy against him. It's all over Fox News. It's all over the little news networks that have popped up when Fox News briefly almost turned neutral during the presidential election, but then quickly turned back because they realized that the ratings are so much better when Tucker Carlson is talking about how masks and vaccine mandates are, you know, oppressive, despite the fact that Fox News themselves has a stricter vaccination policy than what Joe Biden has presented. They still follow Donald Trump's lead. And not only are the politicians like Ron DeSantis and Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell and all of these other guys still promoting Trump's agenda, but the conservative media is promoting Trump's agenda. And worse off, the American people are still following this and they're still listening. They would rather listen to Donald Trump's lies than listen to proven facts. They would rather risk their own lives than listen to science. Because Donald Trump, somehow, despite the fact that he's a failed politician, or I'm sorry, a failed businessman, he's definitely not a failed politician. I mean, I guess he is, depending on how you look at it. But despite the fact that he was a failed businessman, that he had no political experience, that his presidency was corrupt and scandalous, the fact that he lied all the time, the fact that he's been divorced multiple times, he's cheated on his wife, the fact that he's looked down on other countries, that he loves dictators, that his hero was Vladimir Putin, despite the fact that Donald Trump is so immoral and so corrupt, his followers still listen to him. And they not only would listen to him, but they would follow him into hell. And if not to hell, they would follow him to the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. And in a moment that I believe cost me a relationship, amongst other things, or at least helped it, that's for sure, because I was in a bad mood that day, man. I watched this live throughout the day, and I was so angry at seeing these terrorists at the U.S. Capitol destroying American soil, destroying our legacy, making a mockery of what this country stands for. And this is not a perfect country by any means, don't get me wrong, but there's a lot good about it. And they made a mockery of it on January 6th in Donald Trump's name. These are the kind of people that still exist today. And you would think that with Trump out of office, with Trump out of power, he can't get on Twitter, that Trump's influence would wane, but it hasn't. He's still invited onto the talk shows. He's still invited on Fox News constantly. We still talk about him daily. And his followers are still 100% devoted to the cause. The only way I can see this working out for us in the future is if, like Donald Trump said, Republicans do not vote in 2022 and 2024. And that will not eliminate the problem of these people still out there pushing the big lie, pushing against facts, pushing against science, pushing against equality. It will not help with that. But at least it will keep him out of office in 2024 when he inevitably runs for president again. And I know a lot of my friends I've talked to already have said, well, that just can't happen. That's just impossible. There's no way Donald Trump's going to run again in 2024. It's too far gone at this point. He'd never win. But you have to remember that in the 2020 election, Joe Biden did get the most votes in history, the most votes in the history of elections. But do you know who got the second most amount of votes in the history of the United States elections? Donald Trump in 2020. If the left, if they continue to fracture themselves like they are doing now, and Donald Trump continues to grow his power in all of these little circles and he never leaves us, then I think in 2024 there is a very real chance that Donald Trump who, when you consider all things together, yes, is the worst president in the history of the United States. There's a very real chance that he could be president again. Because like I said earlier, Donald Trump has opened the lament configuration. He's opened Pandora's box. Nothing will ever be the same. Politics will never be the same. They will never be like they were when I grew up, or when you grew up, or when your parents grew up. Things have changed, and there is no turning back. I had to throw in the catchphrase there at the end. That's going to do it for me tonight on our inaugural episode. I want to thank you for listening. I feel bad that I didn't get to talk about half the things I wanted to talk about because there's so much to unpack with the Donald Trump story. But I have faith that the story's not over. And we'll continue to talk about it in the weeks and months and years to come, or as long as I decide to do this show. Once again, thank you for tuning in. I hope you subscribe. I hope you keep listening. Next week, we'll talk about all of the big events and news and everything else that's relevant and worth talking about. And I will see you then next Saturday, right here on No Turning Back. Have a great weekend.